Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. As technology has improved, so has market efficiency, and finding extra returns through active management is as challenging as ever. In light of this, tax alpha, or creating value through tax management strategies, has grown in importance and popularity, and has left investors asking, how can I minimize taxes in my investment strategy? For today's episode, I've invited my colleague Jack Malley, Global Market Strategist for JP Morgan Asset Management, to discuss the outlook for taxes and how investors can minimize their tax burden. Before we begin, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. So let's get started. Jack, welcome back to Insights Now.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
So how should we think about tax policy, particularly in reference to the upcoming U.S. election?
Yeah, well, let's talk a bit about the election first. And I think it's always important to remember when you're having conversations around politics in general, the election in particular, we have to acknowledge from an investment perspective that the composition of Congress is what really matters, because Congress is that body that actually has the authority to make changes to spending policy and to taxation policy. And I don't know about you, but it feels to me like this is a very divided country, right? Politics have become extremely tribal. We're moving further and further to either side of the aisle, not a whole lot of room for agreement. And that division is reflected in the composition of Congress. You look at the balance of power in the Senate. You look at the balance of power in the House of Representatives. No party has had a filibuster-proof or veto-proof supermajority mandate in a very long time. And while I don't know what's going to happen in November with this election, I can be reasonably confident that it's going to be more of the same, the status quo, gridlock, which means that any policy that comes our way is going to have to be the product of bipartisan cooperation. We have to be able to figure out where Democrats and Republicans actually agree. And if you're thinking about that as like a Venn diagram, right, the little area in between is very, very, very small. There aren't a lot of things on that list. And tax policy ends up being a more interesting conversation, if only because at the end of next year, at the end of 2025, a handful of key provisions from the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act are set to expire. It's not the corporate stuff, which I think is generally speaking good news. Corporate tax rates were too high for too long. Now they are more competitive and American businesses are not incentivized to leave. It's the individual tax rates, household tax rates, our tax rates. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that may be changing. And it's not just the tax rates. It's the extension or expansion of the child tax credit system. It's the doubling of the estate tax exemption. It's these alternative minimum tax exemptions, right? A lot of different things are set to sunset at the end of 2025. And the only way that they don't is with congressional intervention. And if Congress is set to be as divided in 2025 as it is right now and it has been for the last several years, then you got to figure out what portions of those expiring tax provisions are palatable to both Democrats and Republicans. And I don't know exactly what that list is going to look like. I can take a guess. You know, maybe things like that increased child tax credit everybody likes. Maybe things like a lower federal income tax level on the lowest income earners in this country everybody likes. But I can basically guarantee that barring some sort of miracle, most of these things are set to expire. Which means that momentum alone, David, is likely going to mean that our tax rates at some point are going to go up, and they're frankly going up probably sooner rather than later.
And so, well, and I guess one other aspect of this is how does our huge deficits and growing national debt, how does that impact tax policy?
In a big way. I mean, this is, if you're looking for those areas of cooperation, right, of bipartisan agreement, one of the other things that Democrats and Republicans can both agree on is that we love spending money we don't have. There is no concept of fiscal discipline anymore. It makes you unelectable in Washington. And while we keep on kind of kicking the can down the road on this thing and taking on more debt, at some point, someone's got to pay the piper, right? And that will likely be reflected in higher taxes, particularly for individuals, particularly at the higher end of the income tax bracket. It may also be reflected in reduced entitlement benefits, right? Changes to things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, programs like that. But it gets even worse, frankly, David, the way I think about this, because while a lot of us are looking for like a magic number for that debt to GDP ratio or a dollar figure where all of a sudden all this stuff blows up, that's not really the way to think about this. The much better way to think about this, I think, is to acknowledge that all this debt that we're taking on needs to get serviced. And every year, for every dollar that the federal government spends, about 13 cents of it goes just to paying down Treasury debt. And if we keep on issuing more debt, and that debt's getting financed at higher interest rates, that slice of the pie gets bigger. And as it gets bigger, it crowds out other things. Where are you going to make these cuts? Where is the fat to trim? It's probably not defense. It's probably not going to be entitlement benefits in a meaningful way, at least anytime soon. And really, all that's left is a pretty small component, frankly, that at least in part is earmarked for spending on things like bridges and tunnels and roads and housing and hospitals and schools, stuff that makes us more productive. And productivity growth is more important now than it's been in a long time because demographics are working against us, population is aging, birth rate is declining. And if we have to keep on diverting funds from those type of investments to pay down this debt that we keep on growing, we may be looking at steady state, slower economic growth, which could translate into steady state, slower equity market growth. So it's not just that our taxes may go up. It's that future return prospects may actually be challenged, too. I mean, this is a really tough situation we're in.
Well, let's not be too gloomy. Hopefully we'll find a way out of it. But meanwhile, what is inevitable is taxes. Mm-hmm. And you know, one phrase that I hear a lot is tax loss harvesting. So exactly how does tax loss harvesting work?
So to describe tax loss harvesting at a very high level, the idea is that you own a security or a basket of securities, and something happens to the market, and those securities sell off, right? And now you're down, at least if you mark it to market, 15 or 20% relative to where it was that you bought it. What you can do through tax loss harvesting is sell that security, harvest those losses, right? Apply them to your taxes that year because now you have a loss on your portfolio. But then take the proceeds from that sale and reinvest them in similar securities, securities with similar profiles, similar sector exposure, similar geographic exposures.
Not exactly the same because that's what's called a wash sale.
That is called the wash sale. And not only does the wash sale prohibit you from buying the exact same security, it also prohibits you from buying a similar security like a day later. You have to wait a little bit. It's about a month waiting period. But you can actually bank these losses, use them to offset taxes from any other capital gains that you may have, whether it's from your equity portfolio, the sale of a house, any other kind of asset that you may be disposing of that year. But then basically reconstructing your portfolio the way that it was before. And that's generally speaking how tax loss harvesting works. And it can be a way to add a little bit of oomph to portfolio returns.
Well, I can see how that works in a down year for the market. Can you use this in a year that isn't a down year for the market?
Yeah, you absolutely can. I mean, one of the things that we look at, right, is that on average over the last 30 years, the S&P 500 has returned about 10%. Maybe a little bit more than that, right? It's done very well for us, right? And more likely than not, the market returns a positive number as opposed to a negative number, about three quarters of the time. And yet, even though the market has all these great statistics backing it up, if we actually look at the composition of the stock market, in any given year, on average, 150 plus names in the S&P 500 close the year down 5%. And if you're looking at companies that at one point or another are down 5% or more, the number is even greater than that. Now, naturally, that number is going to be smaller in good years and bigger in bad years. But I think 2023 is a great example of this. I mean, the S&P 500 is up north of 20% last year, but 120 plus names in the index closed down 5% or more, which means that even when you have a good year in markets, you can have a bad year for stocks in the market, which means there are a lot of opportunities, even in good periods, to harvest those tax losses and generate alpha.
So if you've got a sophisticated harvesting operation going on, you can actually find tax losses to harvest every year.
That's exactly right.
All right. Jack, thank you for sharing your insights today. On our next episode, I'll sit down with Joe Wilson, a portfolio manager within our U.S. equity group, for a conversation on artificial intelligence. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.
Tax loss harvesting may not be appropriate for everyone. If you do not expect to realize net capital gains this year, have net capital loss carry forwards, are concerned about deviation from your investment portfolio, and/or are subject to low-income tax rates or invest through a tax-deferred account, tax loss harvesting may not be optimal for your account. You should discuss these matters with your investment and tax advisors.